Welcome to episode 121 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. On a recent trip to London, I had the great pleasure of catching up with adventurer, writer and motivational speaker, Alastair Humphreys. For those of you that don't know by now, Alastair is the man behind the drive to encourage people to get outdoors and enjoy what he calls micro-adventures, spontaneous little trips, often overnight getaways which can be undertaken locally. In 2012, National Geographic awarded Alastair the accolade of Adventurer of the Year, and it's his passion for large-scale adventure which he now distills down into the lower-key, easily accessible level right here in the UK. So, let's get straight on with it. Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 121. As I sit here, it is a beautiful, beautiful day, and I'm in London, and you might be able to hear the sound of construction in the background, but I'm actually sat at the Camley Street Natural Park, which is a purpose-built nature reserve on the site of an old railway coal yard, which is between Regent's Canal and St Pancras International. And I'm up in London to have a few meetings and talk to a few people, and one of those people is a gentleman sat next to me, none other than Alastair Humphreys, who a lot of you will have heard of because of articles that I've written recently, or this whole idea of micro-adventures, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. So we're going to start off just with a little bit of background. For those people out that don't know exactly what sort of crazy stuff you get up to, that is maybe sort of kind of quite different to the whole ethos of micro-adventure, because you go on some quite sort of protracted trips, or have done. So just tell us a little bit about that.
Yep. I will tell you about that. I finished university and decided that I wanted to just go and have a big adventure, and not really having the skill to climb a big mountain or the athletic prowess to go to the North Pole or the money to do any of those things, I went for a cheap option, which was to cycle around the world. And I was away for over 4 years, cycling through 60 countries and 5 continents. And by the time I got home, 4 years later, I'd cycled 46,000 miles, all on a budget of under £7,000. And that really set me off. From that, I started to write books and started to wonder whether I could make a living out of doing what I loved doing, which was adventure. And so in recent years, I've been doing different expeditions in different parts of the world, such as... I walked across southern India. Last year I rode across the Atlantic Ocean. Then I did an expedition up on the Arctic, in the Arctic on the Greenland ice cap. And I finished the year by walking 1,000 miles across the empty quarter desert in Arabia, following in the footsteps of the old adventurer and travel writer Wilfred Thesiger. And I did that to try and make a film and to learn a new skill. And... yeah, I've been doing this since I left uni about 12 years ago.
And, you know, a lot of people listening to this think, well, I haven't got the budget to do that, or because they assume it comes down to budget, or they haven't got the time, they've got commitments. But, of course, as you say, you've made this into a career to the point where National Geographic recognised your efforts last year. And I think I'm right in saying you were their Adventurer of the Year, was that right?
I was one of the Adventurers of the Year, yeah. There were several, but yeah, that was a very nice accolade to get.
And it must have made it well worth it, because, you know, you're doing it for yourself, I guess, but, you know, pushing yourself, but actually for other people to see that you're kind of making a contribution, and because it pushes other topics whilst you're doing it.
I suppose so. I think the big adventures that I do are inherently pointless and stupid and selfish, and I think that's all very true, but they're meaningful and fun and enjoyable and worthwhile to me. And if I can encourage other people to go on adventures of their own, whether they're literal ones such as the sort of stuff I do, or it's adventures in whatever niche of life they're in, then I think that that's when it starts to feel more worthwhile.
So, okay, so we're talking about Arabia and the Atlantic and what have you, but then you've also done a lap of the M25.
Yeah, which came about because of what I just said, which is trying to make the whole thing slightly less about me and to try and convince other people that although I've done these big sounding adventures, I'm not some sort of big macho Superman. I'm just a normal person, and I just chose to go and do this sort of stuff. And so I wanted to try and break down the elitism of adventure. It's quite an elitist world, and I wanted to just try and show that normal people with normal lives and normal fitness and normally expensive bicycles can all go off and do fun, exciting stuff. And from that I came up with this idea of micro adventures, which is deliberately small adventures in pretty familiar, unexciting landscapes, which is, I guess, why we're here in this this wonderful wilderness right in the middle of London.
It's a perfect setting to talk about that, because, you know, as we are just finding somewhere to sit down, we're sat here in the shade, and I hope for our listeners, I hope the occasional breeze isn't too much of a distraction. For a lot of inner city people, inner city kids who, you know, dream of getting out there and what have you, these little pockets of greenery are a blessing. And although, you know, you're not most likely going to expect to find anyone pitching up here overnight, the principle behind it of getting away to, like you say, familiar sort of areas is one that is very accessible for everyone.
Yeah, I love the fact that this little part we're in now, we're surrounded by reeds, we're next to a pond with a moorhen and a coot, and there's dragonflies around, and yet we're 50 yards away from the fast train to Paris. 20 yards to our left is the Regent's Canal, and this is like a little metaphor for what I'm trying to get people to do, which is wherever you happen to live, wherever you happen to work, don't feel constrained by the fact that you have a 9-to-5 job in a big town. Flip it round and think, how can I get from where I am out into a wild area? And the wild area might not be the Himalayas, but whatever it might be, the North Downs is better than doing nothing at all. And I think that's what I'm trying to say, is that rather than thinking, oh, I can't go and climb Mount Everest, so I'm just going to sit at home in my pants and watch EastEnders, think, what can I do with the time I have available and the skills and the money and the and geography I have, and just get out there and have some small adventure close to home. And I think for people who've never done that sort of thing, it can be quite a challenge and quite a big deal.
And I think also in terms of connecting people, I know, for example, on Twitter, if you search Twitter with the hashtag microadventure, one word, the people that I have now come into contact with just on the South Downs, which is my part of the world, that, you know, they're saying about they're going off doing this, that and the other, and just strangers that just say, look, anyone up for just going for an overnighter? We'll meet at this train station at this time and we'll just go off and do this, that and the other. I think it's a wonderful thing because, as we both know, the outdoors community is such a kind of a friendly community. But there was something listeners might have seen me, I think I retweeted it or put it on Facebook or something. You were recently up in, I think it was Edinburgh.
Glasgow.
Was it Glasgow? Yeah. And so what, and that you did, I think you did a podcast for the BBC, am I right? And so how did that come about?
I wanted to just emphasise my point that even if you're in a big city, you're not far away from somewhere wild and beautiful. So I headed up to Glasgow, which I don't know at all, and through Twitter I found a few volunteers to join me, and also through Twitter I got in touch with BBC Scotland, the outdoor show, which is another esteemed podcast like your own,
and too kind.
And so me, the journalist, and three total randoms who'd never met, we got the small little commuter train out of Glasgow to the Campsie Fells, climbed the hills, and slept there for the night. And it was brilliant. The view down over the city was absolutely fantastic, and you'd see all the lights, and there we were on this beautiful hilltop, thinking that half an hour away was the city, and then we were back into the city for 9 o'clock in the morning for everyone to get back to work.
And you see the pictures, and what I'll do is I'll dig out that post on your site and link to it in the show notes here. But you know, you see the pictures of people sort of traipsing up the hill and what have you, and they're just wearing their civvies, they're in their jeans and their t-shirts and carrying a sleeping bag, which they may have borrowed or what have you. So let's just talk about, you know, the whole making it accessible for people. A lot of people are thinking, oh, I would love to do that, but I haven't got this and I haven't got that. It's actually not about having a lovely tent or having a, you know, top of the range sleeping mat or anything like that. That's not the point.
No, absolutely. And I think as I've been doing the micro adventures for longer and longer, the idea seems to have distilled more and more down to the very simple concept of leaving work at 5 p.m. going off and doing something and being back by 9 in the morning. And in order to do something in that sort of time, you really only need a sleeping bag, a couple of woolly jumpers, and but that's all you need. You can then upgrade your luxury with a sleeping mat and a bivy bag and a hip flask of whiskey, or
always recommend,
yeah, packet of crisps or whatever your vice might be, and then you go. You just get on the train and you just make yourself do it. As long as the weather's reasonable and you're not climbing a massive mountain, the worst that's going to happen to you is you'll get a little bit damp, but you will come back, I think, probably a bit tired realistically, but you'll be motivated and enthused and invigorated for the next day.
Well, just to kind of give my own sort of take on this, you guys will probably have seen me talking about a recent micro-adventure that I had with a good friend, Glenn. And there is a little video and this and that sort of still to follow. But it's, as I say, as we sit here, it's a beautiful sunny day. We must have picked just about one of the wettest days in recent times, and it's just been beautiful since. And on that occasion, as you say, we kind of added a couple of items. So like I had a jet boil stove and what have you, because we weren't, you know, you could just get some fish and chips on the way and that's your dinner, and then come down and have a fry up in a local cafe on the way back down. But we decided to just have some very basic kind of boil in the bag type stuff. And on that occasion, I had a 40 litre rucksack, which just had, like you said, it had a bivy bag, sleeping bag. Because of the rain, we took a tarp as well. Didn't have to. We could have just tightened the bivvies around our necks a little bit and it would have been fine. But as you say, when I walked through the front door, you know, my family said, well, yeah, how was it? And I think the word I used was awesome, because it was literally, we picked a spot on the outskirts of a local town, quite a high population town, and just because it was in the middle of the two of us, and we said, right, that's where we'll go. We're going to go slightly further afar to the, you know, South Downs sort of in coming weeks. But again, it was just, it didn't matter that it was raining, it was just about getting out there and doing it, you know. And I think I've got next to my side here, because we're going to sort of just move on a little bit, because so you're an adventurer, you're a writer, and you're a motivational speaker, and I've got a copy of one of your books, which is actually a folded sheet mappazine edition of your book. It's like a scaled down version of the full thing, and again I'll link to these, because I know you've got them on your website. You've got links to that, of course. Go and buy it, it's very good. And it's called There Are Other Rivers, and I was saying to you before, I like your way of writing, because it is inspirational, but it explains kind of your thoughts that you must, yeah, as you're going along, and the experiences. Just tell us a little bit about this book, and about, you know, sort of what it talks about, and also, you know, do you take notes as you're going as a writer, or do you just rely on coming back and thinking, I've had this adventure, I've had this experience, and now I'm just going to sit down with a cuppa and my Mac and just tap into it?
All of my trips, I write a lot of diaries. I do that to help with the book, but I also do it because I enjoy doing it. And when you're on your own, you've got no friends, it's something to do. It helps me process the thoughts and process the trips. So I write diaries regardless of anything, but my memory's terrible, so they're a pretty essential aspect to the book. I also use an audio recorder to record stuff as I'm walking along, just extra thoughts along the way. This book is called There Are Other Rivers, and it's about a journey that I made walking across southern India, following the holiest river in southern India, the Kaveri, which I followed from the mouth of the river on the east coast of India right the way up to the source of the river, which is a temple up in the mountains of western India, and from there I carried on down to the sea. I came back and I started to write a book about it, and the book was terrible. It was really rubbish. I was writing away for ages, months, writing this book with a bit of a heavy heart because it was just rubbish. And in the end, I made the wise decision to give up and quit the project, and I let it lie for a while. And then I came, then I decided to try and approach the book in a different way, which was rather than writing a normal travel log, I went here and I did this and I did this and I did this, like normal travel books, I decided to try and distill that trip into what for me was the essence of travel, to try and think why I travel, why I go on adventures, and to write this book so that in theory it could be about any journey made anywhere in the world at any time in history by any person who shares the same sort of motivations that I do, which I think are pretty standard reasons for wanting to travel and to challenge yourself. And so that was one theme of the book, and the other theme was to try and tell the story of one day on the road. So what one normal day on an expedition is like, from waking up in the morning right through until you go to bed. And I tried to weave those two strands together into a book. During the book, I took a lot of photos in India, and I wanted a way to try and show my photographs. And also, this book isn't chronological, you don't need to read it from the start to the end. So this idea came of making a mapazine about it. A mapazine is just like an Ordnance Survey map, it's the same size, same dimensions, it folds out into an enormous sheet like an Ordnance Survey map does. It's double-sided, and each panel you can fill however you want with text or photos, and it's quite hard to read. You can't really open it all out, so you tend to have to just dip into it, read little bits of it here and there, which I quite liked, people having to just explore it and find out things for themselves.
So this is self-published?
Yes.
Yeah,
the whole book is self-published.
Because there are a lot of people that think, look, I go off and have all these adventures, I'd love to share them. And I think a lot of people might still think you have to get a publishing deal, and you have to think back to the likes of Tim Ferriss, who a lot of people will know because I know I've spoken about him and what have you, the 4-hour work week, the 4-hour body, the 4-hour chef is his latest book. But I think he took 26 approaches to publishers and no one took it, and then he got taken and the rest is history, as they say. But there is something nice about self-publishing, and it does give you the freedom to, like you say, play with the format, and, you know, as long as you've got the faith in what you're doing and what have you.
Well, that's what I liked about this, because I have a normal publisher now for my other books, but this one I chose to voluntarily go back and self-publish because I wanted to do something a bit different, and I was willing to stand or fall by that. So I came up with the idea, I wrote it, I did everything myself. If the book is rubbish, that is purely because of me. There's no excuses, nowhere to hide. And I was willing to take that risk on it, and I've enjoyed it. And I really think now self-publishing is the future of publishing, particularly for people who aren't in a big mainstream audience, but people who have a small niche of people who might be interested in it, in whatever they're doing, that's only of interest to a few people, but it's still interesting. And with that, there's no reason not to self-publish your book. You don't have to outlay any money at all. It doesn't matter if you sell one book or 100 books. If you want to write the book, you should go and do it.
Yeah.
There are tools to do that now.
And I think, again, you know, touching on the idea of money here, I think, you know, that this idea of getting away and having your little adventures and it not having to cost a lot obviously follows through to the idea of sharing those adventures. And I think there's a part in the book there where you're saying that on that trip and you were taking the route that was not the traditional glitzy sights of India sort of thing, didn't it cost you £500 £300 of that was the flight and the rest was just making your way?
Yeah.
Which is great, because a lot of people think you can't go to India for £500.
Well, if you don't need any transport because you're walking, and you don't need any accommodation because you're sleeping out under the stars, then suddenly all you have to spend money on is curry, which is no bad thing.
Which is good if you like curry.
Yes. Actually, curry for breakfast starts to lose its appeal after a while.
Yeah, I can imagine. But then, you know, we're a hardy bunch. We kind of, as long as you can sort of get fueled up and what have you. And you and I first met at a Kathmandu store opening in London a couple of months back, I think. And when you were speaking there, you were saying about various other trips, and the one that you did in the over at the, was it the Empty Quarter over there, and you had, what was it, 40 days worth of rations, and it was just, it wasn't ration packs, it was just
biscuits instant noodles.
Yeah. And again, that's it. You know, if we think back to when we were kids, just camping out in the back garden or having a midnight feast under a blanket or something, it's no different. You're just a bit bigger and maybe you should know better. And, you know, but you can make your own decisions. I think that's nice. And I think it's good that, you know, people get so wrapped up in their, like you say, the 9 to 5, and they think that they come home and they've got the family and they sit and watch TV, and it is very easy to flitter away the evening and what have you. And I think, you know, there is a danger when people buy these sort of mainstream travel books, things they aspire to, but by their very nature they kind of set themselves as something that is not attainable by people that are a bit fed up with their 9 to 5. And I think it's nice that even with the format, with the magazine, it's nice that people can just dip into and be inspired, and as we say, just hook up with some people that share similar frustrations, similar beliefs, and just get out there and do stuff, you know. As I've said to you before, and regular listeners will know, a lot of my approach to photography is one of keeping it simple, not using, you know, we all know about Photoshop and post-production and everything, but if you can get it right at the time, you just make a little preparation. And the same with the podcast. I don't tend to edit a lot. I just kind of, we're in the moment, we have our conversation, and that's lovely. I think, you know, keeping things simple is that something that was instilled in you by parents, or was it just something that you came to realise that, do you know what, you don't have to follow everyone and have to buy the latest kit or what have you? Is it something that just came naturally to you?
Yeah, I think it's probably just my nature. I can't be doing with fuss and faffing about, and I kind of like to be in charge of what I'm doing and in control of my own fate. And if that means going on a trip with pretty shabby equipment rather than spending months or years chasing sponsorship, then I'd rather just go and do the trip and make it as best I can now, and then move on to the next thing. Because I also think I'm quite impatient. When I decide I want to do something, I want to do it now. So I have an idea, and then I go onto Google and I open 1,000 tabs on my computer and I read everything there is about that subject, and then I just want to go and do it. And once I've done it, I know it isn't, I won't have done anything to the best quality possible. I'm slightly slapdash, but I've done it quite well, and then I want to get on to the next thing and do something different. And I think that's also reflected in the big expeditions I've done, is they're always different. So rather than becoming a specialist at one field of activity, I like trying new things and just getting on and doing it and giving it my best shot.
So how do you deal with the, say, not the aftermath, the anticlimax, or the threat of anticlimax after, you know, four years or 6 months or whatever it might be, is a long time to be away from your surroundings, your comfy sofa, your pets, whatever people have surrounding them. And I remember you saying something about when you came back from your cycle around the world, all of a sudden it's just, I'm back now. And okay, if you knew that someone's waiting for you to write up your adventures and there's the book deal and it's all there, that's maybe one thing. But how do you deal with just thinking, right, I better go and put the Hoover around now? And because it's a world away. It's maybe not so marked going overnight somewhere, but that's a hell of a change, a culture shock, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I don't think I deal with it particularly well, which is why I keep going off on more trips. When I'm away, I look forward to getting home. I get home and I like that for a while, and then the realisation comes that going off on that trip hasn't solved all of life's problems, and that I still want to go off and explore places and challenge myself, and then I end up hatching the next trip. And besides, now that it's become a job as well as a passion, then you're only as good as your next story. And so you have to keep trying to come up with ideas of trips, if only for that reason. But that's not a problem, because it's what I love.
And I think, you know, let's just one final point, and we'll just kind of round off on this. In There Are Other Rivers, there's a what some people might see as a kind of like a cursory sort of paragraph, which is just within the book, but for me it kind of resonated as a photographer. And I would hope with the listeners is that, and we spoke about this briefly as we were walking to this bench to sit down here, you don't have, for all the hundreds, thousands maybe of photographs that you take on a trip, you don't have any of those pictures put up around your house to kind of remind yourself. And you know, now a lot of people listening will think, because they're passionate about photography, they're passionate about the outdoors, they might think, well, that's just crazy, wouldn't you want to share that with your friends and family and what have you? But you have got a reason why you don't do that, and it's personal to you.
Yeah, I love taking photographs and documenting my trip, but I just feel that when I get home, I don't want to put up pictures of something that I've done in the past. I want to be thinking about what I'm going to be doing next. And also, the trips that I do are generally, despite the fact that my job is talking about what I do, the irony of it is I don't really like talking about my experiences, and especially the solo ones, you can't really articulate them particularly well. So I kind of like to just keep them to myself and save the wall for Athena posters and IKEA prints and
the trappings of modern living.
Yeah, hopefully at some point in the future, if I ever get manly enough to have a shed of my own, then that's when I think there'll be some photos on the wall.
So we were just talking about sheds and why every man needs a shed of some description, and there is an article coming up on the Active Photographer about my new retreat, where I'm now doing a lot of my writing and planning and podcasting and what have you. So let's wrap it up there, because I'm aware that, you know, I never like to waffle on sort of too much, and I think if you guys haven't taken at least three things away from our conversation, then you need to go and, I was going to say hit rewind, that's showing my age now, you need to go back to the beginning and start and listen again. So let's just give a few links. All this will be in the show notes anyway, but those of you that sat maybe on your commute and you got your iPhone and you want to check out what it's all about, let's have a couple of links where people can go to find out more.
I think the best one's just alistairhumphreys.com, and if you put that into Google, your bad spelling will probably get corrected and it'll take you to the right page, and from that you can get to Twitter and Facebook and Vimeo and Flickr and all that stuff.
And there's also I think there's a separate site for microadventures itself.
Yeah, microadventures.org, which is really just a one page holding thing to try and summarise the idea of a microadventure and get people thinking that perhaps one day they can leave work, go sleep on a hill, get back for 9 o'clock crumpled but happy.
And yeah, for those of you that have never done that, it is, you know, we would say this, but it is highly recommended. I think it will have more of a marked effect on certain people, depending on their individual situation, where they are in life and what's going on in their own lives. But if you have tried it, or you are planning planning a little trip or anything like that, do get in touch, either with myself or drop Al a message, because he's, you know, very friendly and approachable chap. He'll always he is busy, he may not reply straight away, but you know, if you want to just drop him a message on Twitter or something, you know, just to show that you're out there and doing it, it's it's there, it's accessible, and that's the whole point. So hopefully that has been useful for you guys, and as ever, it's all about sharing. So if you want to tell me something or ask questions, it's, you know, the platform is there for you to do that. So on that note, Al, thank you very much for your time today. I know you're very busy. You're off for another meeting and then heading off to the Isle of Wight to go on your own little cycle all around the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, I'm going to cycle a lap of the Isle of Wight and sleep on a hill somewhere.
Fantastic. And I, for one, are going to look forward to seeing seeing the fruits of your labours on that one. So thank you very much for your time. And guys, I hope that's been useful. And look forward to similar conversations which inspire you to get out there and just get on with it.
Remember, if what you've just heard has encouraged you to get out there and enjoy the outdoors locally, you can also find more tips and inspiration on Alistair's website. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast. CurrentPhotographer.com.